Let's head to Edmonton now, catch up with Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's the mood like out in Edmonton, Ray?
Oh, happy times.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, everybody's really having a good time here. Honestly, it's like everybody's waiting for the shoe to drop on Peter Chiarelli. There seems to be this real sense of, I don't know if it's momentum or dread or something, that a change is coming quickly. I don't know if that's the case, but it sure feels like it.
Ray, is that because they don't want a desperate manager to make desperate, ridiculous things happen before the deadline?
Well, I don't think it's just one thing, but I would say if you don't think he's going to be your manager going forward, then, you know, past this year, then how can you let him handle the trade deadline and handle contracts that are going to need to be signed? And, you know, I would think that has something to do with it. Also, I mean, look at the list of moves that have been made, and on very few has Chiarelli come out a winner. You know, some of them, like, you know, he signed the goaltender, Mikko Koskinen, in the offseason for $2.5 million, and it was largely laughed at because of the amount of money spent, yet Koskinen has been more than fine for them. Yet he signed him the other day for $4.5 million, and that seems a little rich on the deal. So it's like there's no winning streak of good moves for Chiarelli, so that, you know, you would get a little bit of a sense of breathing room. It doesn't feel like that at all.
Ray, I spoke to somebody in Edmonton last night, and it's fine. Like, okay, so there's been a little bit of turmoil, like, and this is on a minor level here in Toronto. You got a successful team that's playing, you know, that's a very good team that's been struggling. Kyle Dubas comes out today. Starts, you know, kind of, I don't even know if that was a State of the Union, just kind of a little chat. And
I think it made sense. The timing felt right for him to come out.
So this is where I'm going to head in Edmonton. Like, would Chiarelli not want to be visible? Would he not want to at least give, I don't even know if it's the right verbiage.
I think he did that, Jamie, when he fired and hired Hitch, and I think he came out, and I think he was
But he hasn't been visible since, really. Like, that was the one thing. Like, he hasn't, like, and how about the owner? Like, show up and do something. Like, we were talking about it.
Yeah, but the owners never come out and talk anywhere, right? No. Like, he's not going to come out and speak.
Not now, he's not.
No, but I mean, what owner is going to come out? Like, I can't even think of any that do.
Well, other than the guy in Carolina. That's the only guy who speaks.
Jerry Jones, Mark Cuban. There are some eccentric owners.
Well, but Jerry Jones is the general manager, too.
Right.
But as to Noodle's point, like, Chiarelli has not been does not communicate very well with the media. He doesn't do it very often. He seems to have a, you know, I'm going to keep those guys over there sort of approach, where Kyle Dubas is far more comfortable and seems to, you know, take that as part of the job. Some guys don't. Some guys do way more than others. You know, it's not his style, but I'm with you. It could be, well, not now. I don't know that anything's helpful right now for him.
You're right. I don't think, but I look at managers that have been under turmoil. I go back to a guy like Bergevin. Like, Bergevin has spoken publicly, even when he was in the crosshairs. And to me, why would Chiarelli, like, why are you cowering? Like, why get out there?
Well, how's he going to? I don't know how he explains the moves. I mean, that's the problem.
I guess that's the truth. But,
you know, that's his job.
But that's your job. And if you're not doing a good enough job, like, then the owner has to say, I have faith in this guy, or I'm going to move on from that. And maybe there is an evaluation process going behind the scenes with Bob Nicholson and the owner right now. I imagine.
Well, and it feels like it's bigger than just the player personnel, right? I mean, now the big buzz is ticket sales and secondary market. You can get tickets, you know, at a pretty cheap rate. And that's, you know, I get it, but, you know, I saw Rashog on SportsCenter last night. Ryan's like, I haven't seen this type of apathy here. I'm like, man, they got Connor McDavid on their team. I thought that was apathy proof.
Well, but it's not when, you know, they're near 50% of their goals from four guys. So what that means is when those guys aren't on the ice, nobody else can play, can score. We talked to Ken Hitchcock this morning, and he spent a lot of the chat talking about they need more from the bottom end of their lineup. He's like, we're always mixing and matching lines because we don't know what we're going to get. Like that, they have a team that is built, Connor McDavid or not, but a team that is built for 8 years ago. They're big and they're slow. They don't score and they can't keep up. And it's shocking in a way. What I do know is the fix is not going to be very quick. Like you can't just snap your fingers and get three quick, fleet, skilled wingers. Like they're not, where that going to come from? Like they're in a tough spot here. They're right up against the cap or near the cap. They've got some problematic contracts. They've got some prospects, but not an overflowing bucket of them. And so, you know, they're all not going to make it. And you've got a team that is dead 500 on the road, dead 500 at home, and, you know, play some good games, play some bad games, and you're right back to where you started. Yet, they're only a couple of points from a playoff spot anyway. Like, it's not dead for them by any stretch.
Well, just to jump in here, and this is not this is not the comparison anyone would want to use or the example anyone would want to use, but someone texting in and pointing out Eugene Melnyk does talk all the time. Melnyk, sometimes you can't get him to shut up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, there is an owner. I hadn't thought of him off the top of my head, but someone sending that in, it's true.
Yeah, Rob sent that. Yeah, it's actually
Melnyk will
very
talk.
Good point.
But that's not a good thing.
Even during a tire fire.
That's not a good. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but
no.
There is an example of a guy.
Yeah, it actually is a great point where, you know, Eugene came out. And I don't think he did himself any favors. Is that about a year ago in the outdoor
game?
Well,
the outdoor, about that, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, that didn't help matters.
But I think he's done a good job in the last while. They had some a new CFO, I think, or CEO take over there, and they've tried to make a little bit of amends with the fans in that, be a little bit more fan-friendly. And I think Eugene's allowed the management group to kind of do their business.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, he's been much quieter this year.
And but they came out, though, and said, we're rebuilding, we're doing this. Like, the message and the narrative was...
And it came from him.
Exactly.
Right? Like, it wasn't Pierre Dorion sitting down with Mark Borowiecki. It was the owner.
Yes, it was the owner.
Yeah. Anyway, the GM in Toronto spoke, Kyle Dubas speaking today, and he said that there's healthy dialogue ongoing between the Leafs and Matthews on a contract. I think that's a pretty positive statement. What do you make of it?
I would agree, because if it's not correct, and he said it anyway, then in 2 months everyone's going to say, well, what happened to the healthy dialogue? Like, I can't imagine you'd make that statement if it's not factual. You know, there are times I think managers say things and coaches say things just to throw people off the scent. But to make a determination publicly like this would be to, you would have to think that something's moving in, you know, the term, which is probably pretty easy to come up with, it's eight. But the money probably is starting to make sense to both sides. And so maybe they feel like in short order, they can come to a conclusion on it. I don't know what else you can read into it than that.
No, but I think that's a good point about how dangerous it can be if you're popping off. Yeah. And I don't sense that Kyle Dubas is a guy that pops off. I think he understands how people are going to read it. Like, right. Oh, okay, there could be a deal in the next couple of weeks. You know, he didn't put a timeline on it.
Hey, Brian, don't forget, though, like when he signed Nylander, he said, look, I'm not going to trade him as long as I'm here. That was an error.
Right. Well, he's learning. Like, he's
right.
That's an error. You can't say that in case what happens if a deal comes up and you've got to trade him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's where I'm, as in the media, I'm all four guys saying as much as they want to say. Go ahead, you know, empty the bin. Say as much as you want to say. But from a management thought, I would think it's best to say as little as possible. Say lots, but say little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, use a lot of words that don't mean much, because you can't get tied to any of them. Right. I think it's really kind of pretty important, especially in a ravenous market where, you know, everybody wants to know everything that's going on all the time. It's a hard place, you know, to get everything right. And maybe he made an error with the Nylander stuff in the, you know, in his you know, I'm not going to trade him comment, but to make this today, I'm assuming that there's real progress, because why say it if not? Then you're tied to it.
Well, I think this whole storyline and narrative has kind of been overlooked because of where the team is at and how it started with Kyle Dubas. And he's got a big support staff from a lot of different people because of his age and because of how progressive we all believe he is. And he's very cordial and professional and treats people with respect. He's an easy guy to like, you know, so he's got a lot of people on his side. But he has no NHL experience in any of these situations. Like, you know, today he was speaking with the media, and he's drawing on his experiences with the Sioux and with the Marlies.
Right.
And the NHL and the Maple Leafs in particular is a very different beast. Right. Like, he is not starting in a market with two beat reporters and 10,000 people in the stands. So he's never dealt with a big contract negotiation in terms of an RFA. He went through it with Nylander. Let's see how he applies that logic to the next guys. He hasn't been through a trade deadline. You know, he's been in the room, but yeah. I can't draw on any. No one's got any experience in terms of what he's done. Any data where we can say, well, a few years ago he pulled the trigger on that. Remember, I don't know what his MO is going to be. He's learning on the job, and he's learning in the biggest hockey market in the world.
And it's never going to get easy until you get out and do it.
Yeah.
But he's always comfortable. He's always he seems like he's got an internal switch that says, okay, I'm going to give you enough information here so you guys can all do your thing, and then that's going to be it. The tap gets turned off. I didn't you get the feeling like he probably thought he had to make a statement, you know, today, whenever, because the way things are going, maybe he can take a little heat off. Maybe the guys can start to play again the way that they think that they're capable of. I don't know that there was anything other earth-shattering in there other than the Matthews stuff, really.
Yeah. No, I don't think there was. You know, he stood up for Gardner, which you would expect.
Yeah, we expected that. But
he stood up for the depth within his organization. He's not going to come out and say, we've got nothing here and we're a shell of a farm system, you know.
No, but, and he also, I mean, the one thing that I don't think we're focused enough on, yeah, Kyle's the guy who pulls the trigger, but, like, Lawrence Gilman's been around a long time. Pretty smart guy, too. Like, his staff, like, Shanny's been through the process, too, with Lou and that. Like, there is a wealth of experience. It's just from the figurehead, the guy, the main guy, Kyle hasn't been the guy this time around. This will be his first kick of the cat.
Well, and we were talking about, you know, offer sheets, and we keep bringing it up, and I know it's a league-wide issue, but for me, I think that's what's got to be most relieving for Leaf fans, is the idea that this is far along enough between the team and Matthews, you would assume, that they're not going to reach July 1st, even if it doesn't happen the next month. Seems like the parameters are there. Why would any, unless all hell breaks loose. And, you know, based on Marner and his history and where he's from and dreaming of being a Leaf and what he's already done and represented and how popular he is here.
Well, we talked about that. Like, if they come up with a number, you still don't want to do it right now? You want to wait till the end of the season? That seems crazy to me.
Well,
yeah, I guess, unless he thinks that an offer sheet is coming that'll push it into a different salary range.
But deep down, everybody knows he doesn't want an offer sheet. He doesn't want to play for Carolina or the Islanders or whoever else. And this offer sheet stuff with Toronto, I just love it.
How do we know that?
What?
Well, we don't know definitively, but I think based on...
Would you not take a hunt? Like, would you not think that that's the case?
Well, I would, but I mean, how do we really know? I mean, he's not going to come out and say it. But so what if the Leafs are offering him $8.5 million and an offer, you know, over, what would it be, 8 years?
Mm-hmm.
And an offer sheet comes in and it's $11 million over 7 years.
Yeah.
It's a significant amount of money. Like, I don't know that it can't happen. I get that he's from Toronto and he's probably, you know, just... sometimes just shakes his head and goes, man, this is just amazing. But until he's signing, then there's always a chance, if it gets into that last week of June, that you start getting into some pretty dangerous territory. Maybe the time to sign him, you can't go back, was last summer. But it's going to cost them a hell of a lot of money, and they still have to make it all fit. They're going to get to those big boys, and they're going to get them all signed best that they can. And then the real scramble is on to see how you fill your team out around If you get Matthews done, you get Marner done, you've got Nylander, you got Tavares, you got Riley for 2 years, you got Anderson for 2 years. I don't see how you fit Gardner, but maybe they will. I don't know, but pretty soon you got to have 18 skaters. They're going to run out of cash eventually.
Yeah. That was always going to be the case. It's just a matter of how much you might be able to squeeze.
And the cap's going to go up a little bit, but and you know, they may have to throw somebody overboard, and that's the wrong term, but you know, a guy on the fourth line who's making 2.5. You know, a guy like
Connor Brown is the guy that
like
seems
that.
Like an obvious but victim of all this, which would be a shame, but it's the reality of the cap system.
Would it be a shame, or would it help you keep Kasperi Kapanen? What if he becomes the RFA target?
Right.
Which I don't think is out of the realm. That's always felt more likely to me. Because, I think Matthews, it sounds like they want to, you know, he wants to be here. Marner, again, I hear what you're saying, Ray. I just feel like everything he's done within the community, the roots, where he's from, what it means, unless they're $4 million apart a year, so I just don't see that.
Right.
But I think Kapanen, if he scores 30 and 60, a team might be like, I'll give you $6 million a year, and then the Leafs, what the hell am I supposed to do? Yeah. Well, like, that's a real danger for
them. Or Braden Point or Matthew Tkachuk or someone
guys
on other teams.
But I'm saying,
those
like
guys,
six,
I hear you, but those guys are great, big players.
Six would be legit. I mean, 60 points gets you $6 million.
Right.
But that's what I'm saying. If Kapanen, they could probably find a way to shape that. If he gets an offer sheet of something with a 7 in it or 7.5 or something, that's where it puts you over the top.
Right.
And you don't give up as many draft picks. And like that's kind of that mid-level offer sheet that could really jam them up on him personally.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I just eventually, like you can say you can make it work or try to make it work, but eventually the number is going to be the number. It's just math. It can be as tricky and sneaky and, you know, diligent and all that stuff as you want, but eventually it either fits or it doesn't. And if you're at $13 million for Matthews or whatever that is, and 10 for Marner and 11 for Tavares and 5 or so for Kapanen, and you're already at 5 and 5 for Riley and Anderson, man, pretty soon the numbers add up fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but we'll see. I mean, right now it's about getting better now, and what can they do now? He said they were going to try and address some holes they feel they have. You know, my words, not his, at the deadline or by the deadline. So that's really the most interesting thing to see in the next month.
Ray, we were talking about Kentucky Fried Chicken scented fire logs earlier on the show.
Oh, gross.
But we were thinking, if you were camping, what kind of scent on the fire, what kind of scented log would get you out of your tent to come and sniff around and see what's there?
Kit Kat.
What?
A Kit Kat.
A Kit Kat log.
I like that.
I like chocolate more than anything.
But not like an Italian sandwich flavored log or...
Chicken parm.
Chicken parm.
That would get me out of the tent.
Chicken parm might do it. Chicken parm, that's a good one.
What about your nonna's lasagna?
Let's see. Now you're getting into
right.
Yeah, I mean that.
That's a lasagna log.
Now it's getting into. I'm thinking about food I've got readily available.
No.
The thing is, I've got Nona's recipe. We can make it. Ours tastes like crap compared to hers. How that used to taste. I don't get it. It's the same recipe. I don't get it.
Special touch, man. It's impossible to replicate. It's
you
so
put
true.
In this much. What is that? I don't know, this much. It doesn't work for me.
It never will.
But the Kit Kat formula, that's the one that I know never changes. Not that I've eaten 1,000 or so of them.
I like that. That would get me out of the tent. There's a lot of food items that would get me out of the tent. A lot.
What did you guys go with?
Well,
we went with some Swiss Chalet flavored logs.
Mine was popcorn.
Noodles had a popcorn log.
Oh,
yours was
a
Kit Kat.
That's not bad. Popcorn's pretty good.
Yeah, but the proper kind, like not the crappy kind. Like
not the microwaved.
No, I'll tell you what. A Wendy's stuff. Baconator log. I crawl out of the tent.
Just slither out of the tent.
Slither like
right
a snake.
Right now I'm thinking there's a whole bunch of logs that's going to get all out of a tent.
Oh, yeah. It's a buffet. It's the biggest fire you've ever seen in your life.
People would just be chucking logs on it, let's say.
It's a wildfire.
Let's bring out the gimp. Watch this.
All right, buddy. Enjoy Edmonton.
Okay, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Here's Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline.